All right. So we're live. I'm joined here by Shannon Q, who helps, is co-host, and she helps on Apologia. I think I said it right. The Apologia
Got
channel. She also has a channel of her own where she posts basically her streams or streams that she's been in. So there's Shannon, and we're joined also by Telltale Atheist, who has a YouTube channel. How are you
Hey,
doing?
thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Thanks for coming on. So I opened up in my community section some asking for questions that people wanted to know, and most of them came back saying that they wanted to know a little bit about your upbringing, what kind of prompted you to make a YouTube channel.
Yeah, I can talk about that a little bit. So, of course, I grew up Jehovah's Witness, and a lot of the Jehovah's Witness doctrine is more designed to keep people on the inside more than to bring people in. Of course, they are going and knocking on doors a lot, but as a result of them doing their best to keep people on the inside, I wasn't allowed to talk to what they call worldly people. I wasn't allowed to have friends from school, things like that. So I ended up kind of getting isolated because the only people that were in my congregation were a little bit older. So as a result, I kind of grew up a little bit isolated from society. It led to some real social problems. And that is actually what motivated me to get into YouTube in the first place, was to give a voice to the people who experienced what I did and give them a chance to do their best to take down the Watchtower Society, for lack of a better term. I wanted to get back at the corporation who is wronging so many people in this world. That is my real motivation.
Well, I'm a big fan of your channel. I've been watching your channel for a really, really long time. I actually have a question for you from myself and from Paulogia. We wanted to know if the Telltale name, was that a reference to Edgar Allan Poe? And if so, what's the connection? Is it from the Telltale Heart?
It is. It's from the Telltale Heart.
Oh,
Let me tell you this one little story here. So one year, I never grew up celebrating Halloween or Christmas or any of that stuff. So I didn't really know how to do it. I mean, it seems straightforward to people who grew up doing that stuff. But
right.
when you were so separated from that whole part of culture, it's not straightforward anymore. So one year I was rushing to find a costume for my daughter, who I call Alpha Force Zero on my channel. It's a code name. And I got to thinking about it. And so what I did was I got her a black shirt and some black makeup and some cat ears and sent her to school as the black cat from Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat. I mean, I didn't just send her as a black cat, it had to be a Poe character. So I don't know. I've always really liked Edgar Allan Poe. And I don't know that the name Telltale Atheist had any real significance, or wasn't really linked to Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, aside from the fact that, I'm out there revealing secrets that people don't want revealed. But yeah, I'm just a big fan of Poe. That's all.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Very cool. So what exactly was it like when you were growing up? Like, besides, not having Christmas and that, is there some another thing I wanted to know too, actually, was, what's the difference between Jehovah's Witnesses and other denominations?
Well, I don't know how much you want to get into this, so I'm going to put some pauses here in case you want to cut it out.
Down and dirty, buddy. Down and dirty.
Okay.
No
So
holds barred.
in like the 1830s, there was Joseph Smith, and that was the founder of the Mormons, who was kind of starting his own little religion, right? And it was like a branch of Christianity. Well, near the same time in the 1840s, I think 1844, there was something called the Millerite movement. And the Millerite movement they were really big on end time predictions. And they had predicted the end of the world based on this Bible math. That's basically that there's a verse in Daniel that's talking about a tree, and it's basically a dream that Nebuchadnezzar is having. Nebuchadnezzar calls Daniel in to interpret it for him. And Jehovah's Witnesses look at this interpretation and they say, that's that, you know, God inspired this interpretation, of course, but we believe that there's more to this interpretation. And so they are projecting. I mean, yeah, they're prophesying. I mean, they are prophesying. They're becoming prophets now about this. And they're saying, okay, let me just take a step back. So back to the Millerites. The Millerites are also doing this in 1844, right? They take this thing that says this tree won't grow back for basically seven times or something to that effect. And then they find in the book of Revelation what a time is, what it's defined as. And then they look in the book of Numbers and they find another verse, and then they, you know, they link it all together and they come up with this number of like 2,520 years or something, right? And they start counting. I know this is kind of confusing, just bear with me. So they start counting from the fall of Babylon when Nebuchadnezzar lost his kingship, and they count forward 2,520 years, and that put them in 1914. Okay, so the Millerites started that, but they tweaked their math a little bit differently, and they ended up with 1844, a different starting date and things like that. Well, eventually, after the Millerites' prediction failed, they all broke up, but Jehovah's Witnesses' founder and the founder of the Seventh-day Adventists knew each other. They were going to a Millerite church, and Charles Taze Russell, the Jehovah's Witness founder, he was infatuated with that math. So he took that math on and tweaked it until he got 1914 and just ran with it. Of course, nothing happens in 1914. So he has to tweak it again and again and just kept adding more predictions under his belt. So the bottom line is Jehovah's Witnesses are extremely similar and come from the same roots as many denominations today. So there's Jehovah's Witnesses, there's Seventh-day Adventists, and a whole bunch of others like that that came from the Millerite roots.
So is what differentiates them the fact that they believe that there's a specific date that the world's going to end and they know that date?
Well, after the 1914 prediction failed, they kind of changed it. And it's
so they just, you know, keep redoing the math, but... and then they say, this is the new date that we've decided upon? Like, how many times do you do that before you're like, maybe we're wrong?
15 or 16 so far, and they're not admitting they're wrong yet. So
never.
Never. So at this point, they've got an amorphous prediction, which is the end will come before the last person who was born in this year dies. And who knows when that's going to happen? Who knows even, you know, who knows when that last person, who that last person is, let alone when they're going to die. So I don't know. It's just a big mess. So what differentiates them mainly is their zealous attitude, their extremism, I guess you could say, their need to preach, go door to door like that. It's just an ugly mess. So
sounds crazy. Sounds like they took an already crazy idea, Christianity, and then just popped on more crazy on top.
If that's possible, yeah.
So I did have one another question that I thought was pretty interesting from somebody. They asked, what do you think, how do you feel about, they were asking both of us, how do we feel about the current state of atheism and how maybe religious persecution in the U.S. is affecting this? So I guess that's two separate questions. I'll answer really quick. Just, I don't want to take up too much time because it's your thing, but I feel good about the current state of atheism. I think it's making a resurgence on YouTube. I think we got a pretty strong community, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it. What about you?
I feel like the atheist community has taken something of a hit, you know, in the past year or two. The reason I say that is because it kind of got a little bit diverted and more, you know, the community got more interested in other topics a little bit. So it did take a little bit of a hit, but I think that there was something of a vacuum that appeared after people started covering other subjects, and it was filled by people like us, who are growing quickly. And so I feel like there's a resurgence. I feel like it's growing a lot faster now than it was before. So I'm really happy about it myself.
I saw a video, I think it was by Emperor Atheist yesterday. And he was basically calling for, and go check it out, guys, if you haven't seen it. Basically calling for atheist channels like ours to start covering, I don't know, for lack of a better word, social justice type issues, like racism and those kinds of things. For myself, I don't agree with doing that, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that there's enough of that. I feel like that was the diversion. Right. That pulled it off course in the first place. We have people talking about that stuff, and that's super popular on YouTube, but I feel like atheism isn't getting as much coverage as that, and it needs more coverage. So I did do a video on social justice and things like that at one point, and it attracted the wrong crowd to my channel. And from that moment, I was like, you know, I'm good. I'm not going to do any more of these. I don't care if it brings in subscribers. I don't care about any of it. I just want to stick to what's real and important to me.
Yeah,
I think it dilutes the movement too. Like if people who are strong voices within the movement, who have something valuable to say, who are starting to garner attention, start to diverge from that message, just because it's popular or because there's a call for it, then it becomes diluted. And once it becomes diluted, it weakens something that's really, really important to all of us. So why not focus on your niche, on what's important? It doesn't mean that those other things aren't important to you. It just means that that's not the focus of your specific channel. For somebody to say that to invalidate what you're doing because you're not broad enough to cover an entire spectrum of things. I mean, that could be endless. That could be endless. You could just keep introducing things that everybody, air quotes, everybody should talk about. And then that never ends. And nobody is talking in depth about what one important topic, and no one has anywhere to go. There's no direction. So my opinion.
I can agree with that. I just want to point one thing out with this too. So when you like upload a video that's a little bit different, like different subject matter, if the subject matter is too different from what you normally do, some of your subscribers will watch it and some of them won't, naturally, right? Not everybody's going to like what you have to say about social justice who does like what you have to say about atheism. So what's going to happen is, they're not going to click on that video, and YouTube is going to assume, I mean, the AI, the algorithm is going to assume that you've kind of lost a little bit of interest in that channel, mm-hmm. and they're going to stop suggesting the videos to your subscribers as much. So what ultimately happens is you start losing views and you start losing subscribers. If you want to talk about a different subject like that, the best route to take is create a second channel. You don't have to dilute your videos and your audience by adding a new subject matter to an already existing good channel. Just add a new channel.
That's good advice.
Yeah, I really feel too, like I was listening to a Sam Harris podcast the other day, and he was saying that in one of his, he was having like a live event with Matt Dillahunty and I think maybe Lawrence Kress. But anyways, he said something like, religion is bullshit. They believe in bullshit things. And then he said after, he got a lot of pushback from people that were watching his podcast. And he was like, I don't understand. Like, you didn't know that I'm an anti-theist. Right? But he said because he hasn't really talked about it in depth for so long that he'd attracted new watchers and then they didn't know, right? So I think that's the real danger of not having voices that are actually talking about, you know, atheism or anti-theism.
Yeah, people need a clear and focused place to go. They need a destination for, you know, if this is the source that I want to go to gain trusted information about a specific subject matter. And once you gain that trust, if they go to you because you're a trusted source for that subject matter and they find something that is completely divergent from what they expect to see from you, that could be a sense of disappointment to them because they've learned to trust you for that content. And now that content isn't available or has changed. And also, I feel like it's just important that it's something that we all have an ongoing dialogue about. And because it's important, you know, there should be trusted sources. I'm a viewer, too. I'm not just on YouTube. I'm a viewer. And there's people that I go to that I feel like I trust them. And if I go there and I find something that is just completely off the rails from what I'm used to seeing from them, I may not check back as often because I'm going to go try to find somewhere else where I can get that information.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Like usually if I want to go to a channel, it's because I want to go there for, you know, if they make video game things like, you know, Destiny content, I want to go there and watch Destiny content. Not that I mind too much if they diverge like one video a month or something like that. Like they do something else. Right. I don't mind that too much, but if it's like, you know, you never know what you're going to get when you go there, then I'd rather just go find one that I know what I'm going to get. King of Cowards also asked if there's anything you guys know of besides religion that people are, for lack of better words, religious about. What would those things be? What do you think, Telltale?
Oh, that's very interesting, actually. I have a coworker who is almost religious about Android. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, I like Apple products, okay? I wrote apps for the iPhone for work for like a long time. So naturally, I like Apple products. But I've seen people religious about many things. I've seen people religious about their operating systems, their computers, or just any number, their cars, their anything. I mean, there are so many things that people are religious about. And I was just actually talking to Genetically Modified Skeptic about this. There's something called he's gonna kill me because I'm gonna get the name wrong.
Yeah, he's the worst. You gotta be careful about that guy.
I know he's gonna murder me. I gotta watch my back now.
Go right for your joke.
No, it's basically like an essential oils cult. It's like a homeopathy cult almost. I guess, you know, he knows some people who found themselves kind of almost worshiping this cult of essential oil, like living on a compound and growing the plants they need to make it and just everything. It's extremely crazy. So that cult-like mentality, that religious mentality can be found in a lot more than just religion.
Yeah, I agree. There's lots of dangerous ideologies. Absolutely.
For sure.
Garbage Human had a super chat. He said, Telltale Atheist, please share how you have such a chiseled facial features.
I guess it's just my good genes. I don't know. I can't even say it's good genes. Like, oh, you guys should see my dad. I got a picture that I will send you of my dad so you can compare us.
He might be really,
I don't even know.
Features. I don't know.
Right.
That's funny. Alistan asked, how do you and Telltale think we should move forward in terms of atheism, religion, philosophy?
Do you want to go or I can go if you want?
You go ahead. Yeah, you feel that one, man.
Okay, so if you don't mind, can you read it back to me? How do we feel about atheism, religion, and philosophy? That was that, right?
How to move forward, yeah, in terms of...
Okay, how to move forward with it. I would say the number one thing that we need to keep in mind when moving forward is we need to avoid any kind of dogmatic thinking. A lot of people look to Buddhism for their philosophy, and I have to admit its philosophy seems enticing, nice, peaceful, you know, don't harm any other living thing, including animals. Don't do all of these things that nobody should be doing anyways, right? It's a nice philosophy. But my problem comes when people adopt this whole philosophy, just take this on and accept it, all of it, without any critical examination. So if we're going to
form out philosophy, I feel like, and of course, this is just my opinion, I feel like we should be forming our own philosophies based on our own moral compasses and checking that against the moral compasses of people around us.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, I don't know, for me, I'm just going to move forward with my channel. I try not to worry too much about what other people are doing. I just kind of worry about what I'm doing. And that might sound kind of selfish or whatever, but I do, you know, try to promote other channels and that I think are good or quality channels. And I do try to stay involved in the community, but at the same time, you know, if somebody, you know, say there's, you know, an anonymous atheist channel out there and they say something I don't agree with, I might make a video about it, but I'm not going to be focusing on, oh, they're part of the atheist, they're part of my community, so I have to call them out or whatever. I just worry about, do I agree with that or not? And put that out
same
there.
Here.
Yeah. What do you think, Shannon?
How the atheist community should move forward? I think that part of it is that we need to start doing more of what we're doing. Like what a Holy Cooley did with the atheist State of the Union yesterday. I thought that was fantastic because the more we become a unified front and share information with each other and work on shared goals with one another, the better off we're going to be. Like the more we unify a message, the more we unify with one another so that we can make sure that we're supporting one another and encouraging one another to go forward and helping to promote each other's messages. I think that's the next step, because there was kind of a drop off because some people within the community seemed to either go away from it or there started to be a bit of infighting. Mm-hmm. And that sort of killed a part of the movement or tainted it for some people from the outside and from the inside, and it discouraged people. And I think it's in a revival phase right now that's really, really exciting. So I think the next step, so that you don't get too far ahead of yourself, is to just continue with that aspect of it, with uniting content creators, with uniting people who are atheist activists, and having productive dialogues and creating quality content. I think that's the next step. And the more people like the viewers right now that go out and share that content and promote that content and talk about that content and get involved, the better it's going to be and the better chance that we have of affecting some sort of change. So that would be my two cents.
Yeah. Duke Bonanza asked, do you think there's any dogmatic thinking in the atheist community? That's a pretty good question.
That's a good question.
That is a good question. Yeah, I would say there is dogmatic thinking in the atheist community. And I think that gets carried over a lot to other parts of their lives if it's not being carried over from other parts to atheism. I mean, you see people working within the whole social justice sphere in their videos, and some dogmatic thinking shows up on both sides. So I don't think that atheism, quote unquote, breeds dogmatic thinking necessarily, but I think that dogmatic thinking is probably part of the human psyche on some level, right? And that's probably what we're seeing happening, is that dogmatic thinking cropping up everywhere. So we just have to find a way to overcome that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I kind of agree with that. I don't think dogmatic thinking, I think some people are more prone to it than others, but that doesn't mean that atheists are immune to it by any means. I mean, just right. Because you figured out, look, there's no God, doesn't mean that you're not going to take up some other sort of dogma, right?
Right. I agree with that too. And I think a lot of the people that antagonize this community or work towards vilifying this community, they look at any atheist who has a dogmatic approach to anything and they say, ah, ha, 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 see, you guys do too. That's no different than religion. And it's important for us.
Religion. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. who hasn't heard that? Well, you can't see all of us, but hands up. Yep, absolutely. we've all had that argument leveled towards us.
Well, right? We can see Telltale. He's got the chiseled features.
Yes, that's right. Telltale's chiseled. He didn't put his hand up, though. But yeah, so we've all had that argument leveled towards us. So I think that we need to be careful, but also by the same token, we need to recognize that there's all kinds of different dogmas, right? So everybody's going to be ideological to a certain degree. The differentiating factor is that if your ideology is bound by simply your thoughts, by how you think about things, then you're able to think your way out of it. You're able to be introduced to things that can change your mind. If that dogmatic ideology that you are holding is something that is being imposed upon you by a deity who could potentially hold you for eternity if you don't uphold it, that's an important differentiation. So I think that everybody has an ideology, and that conflation in and of itself, when these types of questions are posed, can be dangerous. Yeah. So that's an important differentiation to make.
Yeah, I also think like if you have an ideology, like if you say like everybody has an ideology, I think the important thing is to make it so that you can change that ideology if you know it's wrong, right?
Right.
Which exactly. Is what religion doesn't do.
No, you can't. It's already been written. Sorry.
Yeah, but yeah,
that is an extremely important thing, because a lot of people grow up with this and automatically default to what they heard when they were young, right? And nobody wants to be wrong. And so, you know, admitting that you're wrong, or admitting that you may have something that's a little bit less than logical in your beliefs, is hard. And that's something that people have to overcome. But I fear that humans may just not be to that point in our minds yet, right? I mean, we have things like tribalism that we have to overcome. We haven't evolved past that yet. And maybe we just haven't completely evolved past dogmatic thinking yet.
Introverts have, kind of.
Right.
not that DC would know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any experience in that whatsoever. But I saw a Logic video a while ago. I think I used it in one of my videos. But he said something that kind of stuck with me. He said that religion isn't necessarily the problem. It's just the symptom of a larger disease, right? Like the larger disease is not using critical thinking, not questioning why you believe the things you believe.
Yeah, and it's a comforting blanket to wrap around yourself that comes complete with a community and somebody to tell you, okay, this is the right way to think.
Yeah, yeah. That is a fair assessment. It's the symptom, right? I mean, that goes back to what I was saying about us just not having moved past that kind of thing yet. We just have to keep pushing and trying to move past it.
Right. And these conversations are important for that type of thing to happen, because it's not just us having this conversation. There's people watching us and people listening to what we're saying. And that, whether we realize it or not, can have a really important effect on somebody's life. So it's important that these types of conversations keep happening and keep happening publicly, so that that type of change can start to take place.
Mm-hmm. So Zandia asked Telltale Atheist if they'd like to know if there's a connection between religion and conspiracy theories. If there is one, so far, the ones I've seen blaring out, New World Order, Agenda 21, Apocalypse theories, are those who are religious?
That is an interesting question. I think that generally...
My subs are
religion,
awesome.
Yeah. Just saying. They are awesome. Yeah, I'm jealous. But I got to thinking about it, like, believing in religion does kind of open you up to being a little bit more willing to believe just about anything, right? I mean, if you can believe that God that there's this being in the sky that's all knowing and all seeing, and he loves you and he takes care of you, but nobody's ever seen the guy, right? What can't you believe? And I feel like it makes people more willing to trust anything that they hear, especially from certain types of people. So if their pastor goes up there and says something about the government or something about, you know, the earth
being flat, or maybe even just not being able to trust science, anything. You know, they're more willing to just accept that their pastor knows what he's talking about, or their friend knows what they're talking about. They trust them, right? So it always opens up the pathway to ridiculous thinking in general, I would say.
You mean the world isn't flat?
Don't.
Oh, God. What did I get myself into?
I can't. Not tonight. I can't even. Don't do it to me.
I've seen a lot of theist channels cropping up that talk a lot about philosophy, and they try to, you know, quote unquote, prove their God by using philosophy. And I've seen a lot of people say that, like, philosophy's dead, that we shouldn't be using philosophy anymore. What do you think about that, Telltale?
So the question is, some people feel like philosophy is dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know, man. I mean, philosophy's been around an awful long time. Sometimes it feels like you've got to beat them over the head to get them to understand something, right? But I feel like given enough time, we are moving forward. I feel like sometimes people get discouraged by the results of conversations or things they hear in the news, things like that. But I feel like we're always making progress on things. So I don't know. I don't think philosophy's dead. I think it may be moving forward slowly, but it's always moving forward. Progress is always being made.
I think epistemological approaches are incredibly valid and very important. Understanding how you think is a type of philosophy. And that is paramount in figuring out how you make decisions, why you make decisions, and how to make better decisions. I think people philosophize without even realizing that they do. And I think people also underestimate the fact that most of scientific methodology, when it comes to hypothesis formation, is a philosophical endeavor. You're essentially projecting what you think the model is going to be so that you can test that model through your hypothesis. That's a type of philosophy. So perhaps the classical forms of philosophy, the older, more antiquated types of philosophy that you read and dusted off books, has been worked through and worked past, but that doesn't mean that there's not more places for philosophy to go and that it doesn't have any sort of current validity. It just means that you have to look at it further. And the fact that we're even talking about it is us philosophizing. So I guess I would have to disagree with that.
Yeah, let me just point one other thing out. I don't know the exact year or the exact person or the exact quote, but I'm just gonna, you know, throw something out there. Back in like the early 1900s, there was a patent clerk, I think, who said everything that can be invented has been invented. It was like 1908 or something like that. Of course, computers and the internet and everything not having been invented at that time. So
why was he wrong?
Right. Yeah, it feels like we're at the pinnacle of everything right now. It always feels like that, but there is always somewhere else to go. And I just wanted to point something out, actually. I found this a couple of weeks ago, but I thought it was an interesting quote from Martin Luther King Jr. The quote is, "If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward." And I feel like that's apt to our situation sometimes.
Oh, that's a good quote.
It is a great quote. I agree with Shannon as well about philosophy. I think philosophy is often misused, but I don't think it's dead. I think it's actually a crucial thing to do, to pursue. For sure. I have another question for you from Freaking Taco Man.
Best. Sorry, didn't mean to derail that, but I was really excited about that. Go ahead.
Ask Telltale what he believes it will take to put an end to modern cultism, cults being your specialty, and also his opinion and knowledge about spotting new cults in the present.
Interesting. Actually, I have a checklist. I don't have it with me, but I'll give you a couple of highlights from it in a second. So what do I think it's going to take to get rid of modern cults is the question, right? Mm-hmm. I would say we're just going to have to spread reason and knowledge and logic. Do you guys know that I didn't know how evolution worked? Didn't even believe it yet, but didn't know how it worked until I was 21 years old. And aside from that, I didn't know how logic works. Just the fact that one thing can be different from another thing. For example, I didn't know that not believing something is the same as believing that that thing is not real. I didn't understand how any of that stuff worked until probably 3 years ago, right before I started my channel. That is the kind of thing we absolutely must spread. I mean, the fact that I didn't know that is shameful for our school system, right? We have to help kids learn about this stuff. So aside from that, that is one step in the right direction. We need to teach our children about logic and science and spread this stuff. So aside from that, the checklist I was talking about, a couple of things on the checklist to identify a cult include things like, do they proselytize? Do they make you an enemy if you aren't part of their in-group, right? If you don't believe the same things as them. I think there are like 11 things on the checklist. Do they guilt people? Do they shun people? Things like that. So I'll see if I can get you the checklist and maybe we can kind of go over it another time. But it's actually in a YouTube video on my channel. So
yeah, I was just going to say you did do a video about that. I remember watching it. So you had the full checklist. I have a question for you. Sorry to interrupt you. See, I know you have other
audience
questions, but I do. Your drawings. The drawings that you do in your video, what was the reason that you decided to do animation as the background, like you animating as opposed to an avatar, which is what you see on most channels? That's really unique about your channel. And are you happy with making that decision? Do you feel like you're stuck with it and you just did it? Like what was the genesis?
The thought process of that?
Yeah.
Well, originally I was actually like my first videos, what I would do is I would do a debunk. So I'd take the video and I'd cut the sound out of it, right? And I'd play the video with sound and video. And then I'd take the piece that I'd cut the sound out of and I would play that over me talking. So people were, their eyes were still busy. They were still watching something, but they were listening to me talk. Then I did put a couple of little avatars up and things like that, and I gave it a shot, but I didn't feel like it was really taking. It wasn't really me. And so I got to thinking, like, what else can I do that will keep people's eyes busy while they're listening to me, right? And so I got to looking at some other channels and what they were doing. I looked at ASAP Science. I'm probably saying it wrong. It's probably ASAP Science. Forgive me. I looked at Minute Physics and other things like that. And I was like, well, I'm really not good enough to stand there and draw on a whiteboard in one take and put it up. And people have already done that. You know, I don't want to be a copycat. So what can I do? What I ended up doing was I had an Apple Pencil and an iPad I just bought. And I was like, well, I'm going to give it a shot. So I turn on screen record. And I'm just drawing a picture with my Apple Pencil in Photoshop. And I put that in my video, and sure enough, it worked. It was fantastic. I mean, it took me like 2 hours to draw, but I'm like, well, you know, I guess I can recycle it. I mean, I don't have all the time in the world to just draw 24/7. So the drawings on average usually take me, depending on how complicated they are, between 30 minutes and an hour. And I speed it up 20 times what it was originally. So just imagine how much drawing time I have to put in to get 10 minutes of footage for a video.
Right.
It's not always easy and I don't always have the time, but I just throw on a YouTube video or something and listen to it while I draw. So it's actually a pretty good way to relax. That's kind of the origin of it.
So you're happy with it too. Like you feel, cause it's definitely a brand for you.
It is. Sure. Yeah. I am definitely happy with it. I feel like it definitely sets my channel apart from others. And that is really what I want. And actually, I bring people in for the art. I mean, people have publicly said, I'm only here for the art, a few people. You know,
so they're there to watch you draw while you while they listen to you talk about cult.
Yeah. and they get to get a little lesson on the laws of logic and stuff while they're watching. So it's a win-win.
Awesome, thank you. Sorry, I know you had more questions, GC. I just wanted to know.
No, that's a great question. Yeah, that's definitely sets your channel apart from others for sure. Okay, so this one's a bit of a longer one, so I'll try to read slowly. My question for Telltale Atheist, 2015 Gallup survey indicates atheists may be the single most discriminated against demographic in the U.S. Only 58% of respondents said they would vote for a well-qualified candidate from their own party if that candidate was an atheist. What can we do as atheists to do? What can we do to change this kind of culture?
That is an interesting question. Yeah, that's going to be hard. Well, first of all, we need to kind of change the mindset, change the idea that people have about atheists in general. So how do we go about doing that? We have David Silverman, I think his name is, right? Yeah. He's going on Fox News all the time as a guest and just trying to get out there that he's an atheist. He's not really attacking anybody necessarily. He's just there. He's just showing people that he's a normal guy too. And not just him, but we can show people that we are normal. We're just normal, nice people. I know personally, all right, let me just say this. A lot of people are afraid of coming out, right? As gay or atheist or anything. They're afraid of the social consequences, and that's completely understandable. But at a certain point in my life, I had already faced the worst of the consequences. Nobody could possibly do anything worse than they already had to me. And I was ready to be who I am at any cost. At a certain point, people reach that. And so when I meet somebody new and kind of befriend them a little bit, you know, have some back and forth conversation, usually I'll just say, yeah, I'm atheist. I don't really believe in God. You know, it's no big deal. I'm not going to attack you over it. I'm not going to be a jerk or anything. In fact, I'll even ask them what their beliefs are. Ask them why they believe it. You know, do some street epistemology and see what they think. I think the first thing that everybody can do is improving the view of atheists by not being rude and by spreading the fact that they are who they are. I'd say that's a good first step.
Yeah, I wonder as well, like we've been talking, I know Shannon as well has been talking to the more vocal haters of atheists, I guess.
I like to call them complex conversations.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people have questioned me about why I bother to talk to people like Max Colby and stuff like that. And I think my standard answer is basically, I think that they're often caught in a feedback loop, right? Like they say mean stuff and then an atheist says mean things back. And then they take that as proof that we're mean. And then they say more mean stuff and it just goes around and around in a circle. And I think it's important that we kind of break that cycle and actually, you know, talk to them like human beings.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And one of the problems with that is the fact that people are generally offended and feel like you're trying to hurt them when you say something negative about their God, about their beliefs. I mean, you can just say, I just don't really believe it. I just don't see it the same way as you. And they will feel genuinely wounded. So that's a hard barrier to get past. It's as like, petty as it feels for them to get that way when you're just saying something so basic, sometimes you have to just do it with the lightest touch and just be like the nicest, overly cool person you can in a situation like that. You know, just be as nice and forgiving and give as much length as you possibly can to them so that they don't get a bad impression of the movement.
And there's so many messages being sent out right now too about what it means to be an atheist. And the perception is, and it's being perpetuated, is that we're persecuting. We are holier than thou. We think that we're better. We
that part's true.
But godless cranium, all of this is true. Just I'm going on the record saying that for him, he's the exception.
I'm a horrible human being.
He's the worst person in the world.
Garbage human.
I'm here to temper him. That's the only reason I'm here. But anyway, there's that perception out about us. And it's difficult because when you're in those conversations, religion is such a personal thing to people that when you say, I don't believe any of that because X, Y, Z, you know, everybody has their own reasons for not believing. They take it personally because they've heard those messages about what atheist means, either in their church or on YouTube or wherever they assimilate their information. And they'll immediately attribute that to you as a defense also, because they want to be able to preserve what they believe. So they'll think, you know, you're attacking me, or you think that I'm stupid, or you're going to attack me, or you're a bad person, because that's easier to a certain degree than just engaging in a conversation, because a conversation might cause you some dissonance and challenge too, right? I mean, not all of them are that dishonest, but the ones that you meet the most opposition, I think that has a bit to do with it. And I think what the best tactic is to respect that those types of things are going to happen and not be baited into acting the way that people accuse us of acting, you know, just, you know, take things off the chin, and sure, it's going to suck, but you're going to have to take some things off the chin and take the high ground and listen to some horrible things about yourself and people that you know and people that you're friends with and people that you respect. Because you need to be able to be the example that defies that logic, or that logic will always stand because of the feedback loop that Godless Cranium was referencing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I couldn't agree with that more.
All right, I have a question I posed on Twitter a while ago. It was a poll actually, so it's kind of a harder question. but it was. I hear a lot of times where atheists say stuff like it's child abuse to teach their children religion, and I don't feel that it is. I mean, I obviously there's cases I think where it is child abuse, but I don't know how. Like, I don't like the idea of the state having the power to just, you know, oh, you're teaching a kid religion, let's, you know, take your kid away. But I know that there are atheists out there that do feel that way. What do you think about that, Telltale?
That is a very interesting and in-depth subject. So
it's like, is there a line between, you know, just teaching and then when it crosses over into child abuse?
All right. So here's the thing. I think Noam Chomsky famously said, I'm not even going to try to quote it. I'm just going to paraphrase it because I'm going to butcher it if I try that. He famously said something to the effect of, we're not protecting free speech so that people can talk about apple pie. If you don't believe in free speech for the most vile, disgusting, hateful speech, then you don't believe in it at all. And I can't take anybody else's rights away, that if they're rights that I want too. So I can't say no freedom of religion. I couldn't do that in good conscience. That's just a terrible way to go. And actually what I'm thinking about right now is a ban on Jehovah's Witnesses in Russia. They have banned that religion there, and they're raiding Kingdom Halls and, you know, taking their books and arresting them and things like that, because they've labeled them an extremist organization, which they are, but they can't do that. I cannot stand for that. So back to childhood indoctrination. There is a point at which it is child abuse. I would say it's a hard line to find, but as a famous judge said about pornography, I'll know it when I see it, right? So it's hard to find, but you'll know when it's there. You will know it when you see it.
What Jehovah's Witnesses do is child abuse, no question about it in my mind. What Mormons do is child abuse. What some Baptists do is child abuse. What some Catholics do is child abuse. You have to find that line.
It probably all depends on how stringently you adhere to the tenets of that faith too. You know, I mean, a lot of people, most people are, you know, Catholics or Mormons or Anglicans or whatever, not even outside of the Christian faith in name, right? They're social, cultural Christians, and they're not, most of them haven't read the Bible. I was a Christian for a very, 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 reading the Bible is what brought me to atheism, and that was in my 20s, right? Well, and I was a devout Christian up until that point, and I'd barely cracked it open except for to read a verse in Sunday school.
Well, it's boring as shit, too. I mean, a lot of it's just genealogies and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. If you skip past the genealogy parts, though, there's a lot of war and death and, you know, rape.
You know what they say about the Bible, though. Reading the Bible is the quickest way to turn somebody atheist.
Yeah, so. I'm a testament to that. Absolutely. Right. I was like, this? What did that just say?
Same here.
What? I got a pretty good question in the chat. It says, Clouds Cranium, do you think there's anything other than religion that get good people to do bad things or a second place?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I hate that. I don't hate it, but I don't like that saying. I think it's simplistic. I mean, nationalism, for instance, can get good people to do dumb things, like Nazi Germany. Even though there's a religious aspect there, but I mean, you can get good people to do bad things for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I can agree with that too.
So Mark asked for Telltale, would you believe Greek mythology is something like, say, the Odyssey happened to you, except the supernatural gods visiting you? So say your crew gets stranded, eaten by a massive humanoid, escape, sail through two harsh extremes in a storm. Some of your crew gets drugged, all your crew dies, and you come to an island with a beautiful maiden looking over you.
Would I believe in the Greek gods if that happened to me? That's an interesting question. Here's the thing about my belief in God. People ask me, what would it take for me to believe in God, right? And my answer to that is, God knows exactly what it would take for me to believe. So if he wanted me to be a believer, he could just make me a believer. He could show me what it is I would need to see. Now, as far as that question, it's a little bit different than that. I would say probably not. I generally look for a scientific explanation in just about everything. I mean, if a big giant Jesus came to Earth and said, you know, I exist, believe in me, I would want to, you know, check to see if it was real. Is it aliens? It could be anything. It doesn't have to be Jesus. So let's find out what it is before jumping to conclusions. There's no reason to believe in Greek gods because some crazy stuff happens to you, right?
Yeah,
I agree.
Like when people say, would you believe in God if one of your prayers got answered? I'm like, well, which one? Like, prove that it was God and not just complete chance or circumstance or something.
And what prayer too? It'd have to be a pretty incredible prayer. It'd have to be like, can money appear in my living room right now? And then it appears. Yes, I think I would heavily consider it. I mean, I don't know for sure, but...
So let's all test right now.
If the camera goes dead and Telltale disappears, we know what happens.
Exactly.
So Roger asked, would you support state atheism, at least as a transitional period?
Would I support state atheism? Okay, so I'm going to ask you some follow-up questions about it, and you just answer as you think she would, okay? Would I support state atheism? What would be included in state atheism? Would that be like our national religion or lack thereof is atheism? Do we have to, I mean, what's different about it?
I would assume that state atheism would mean like the state endorses atheism, I'm guessing.
Okay, interesting.
I don't think that the government should endorse any religion or lack thereof. They should stay completely out of religion.
Neutral.
So what she said was, even if it was a transitional period. Now I'm trying to think to myself under what circumstances it could be a transition. I don't want to count anything out completely because I'm sure that there's some edge case in which I would say yes, but overall I'm going to say no, I probably wouldn't support that.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't like thought crimes and that's basically exactly what you would have to do, right?
That's exactly right. Yep.
All right. So I'm just trying to power through some of these questions. And also, what do you think about the evidence that over time and through generations and translations versus impersonal bias were added to the religious texts, resulting in the extreme and slight differences between, this is a long question, you know, yeah, I don't know what they're actually, I don't know. Cause I had to,
so from what it was a question you just read, right? Because yeah. From what I picked up from that, they're basically saying, how much personal bias do I think slipped into the Bible through the hundreds of thousands of hands it passed through while it was being written? Is that a fair assessment, you think?
Yeah, I think so. Something
okay.
Like
I would say a whole heck of a heap. I'm bringing that phrase back, by the way. So, a whole heck of a heap of bias. For example, I mean, there are errors that take place when the Bible is being copied, of course, because they didn't have printing presses or anything. People had to copy this thing by hand, right? So they would, some guy from a neighboring town would come over and he'd sit down with the Bible with the book of Matthew or something. And he'd start copying it down. He'd lick his finger and he'd flip the page and wouldn't even notice that a second page comes with it, right? So he's just completely cut out a full page of what he was copying, or his eyes drop from one line to the next. That's just unintentional accidents. I mean, how accurate can the thing possibly be after 70, 80, 100, 1,000 copies? How accurate can the thing really be? And not only that, and we know for a fact that verses, the last 8 verses in the book of Mark were just completely made up in like the 200s or something like that. So personal bias is all through that thing. There is no way to trust that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Sorry, that took a wild answer.
Yeah, and it's also, it's great. A compilation too. It's a compilation a compilation of tests that were translated from Hebrew to Greek and then to English and then reinterpreted and tweaked so that they could hold the perspective of particular sects of that religion. And a lot of the original documentation is, anyway, I'll go off on a tangent. Don't get me started.
So I got one more question and then we'll be pretty much done, I guess. So somebody asked if, cults of personality, do you consider them cults? I mean, I guess it's right in the name, but would you consider them cults under religion, like a religious cult?
That's interesting. So really the question is, can cults be limited to religion ultimately, right? Because there are many different types of cults. Cults of personality. I would say, yeah, I would definitely identify certain cults of personality as cults for sure. I don't think it has to be limited to religion. I think that ultimately people get thrown off and less suspicious of it if it's not a religious cult directly. But Heaven's Gate, for example, seemed a lot less religious than it was. It just seemed like these guys believed in aliens and they believed that this comet was coming and they were going to hop on this flight, across the cosmos. And even Scientology is almost not even religious. It's more science fiction than anything. So yeah, there can definitely be non-religious cults, and they're a little bit more dangerous sometimes because people's guards are down.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Telltale. It was It was awesome talking to you. It's been a great hour. It's flown
Thanks
by.
For having me. Really glad to be here. Sure.
Everybody go check out Telltale's channel. I'll leave a link. I'll put the link in there when this video uploads. And next week or in 2 weeks, we're going to have Nightmare Fuel on for another discussion. We're probably going to talk about anti-theism, I'm guessing, because he's a big anti-theist. So I'll put up on my community tab probably next week. I'm asking for questions, so you guys can ask your questions if you want. Shannon won't be with us because she's got some family obligations to attend to. So,
sorry.
Yeah. So I'm going to miss her, but we're going to have Godless Engineer on. He's going to be co-hosting. So.
Oh, he's way funnier than me, too.
Yeah. So thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, thank guys. You, man.